welcome to New Zealand Vegan Podcast, episode 127. Feels like I've done, haven't done a podcast in a really long time, months and months and months. But I just had a look at my website and it's only been 2 months almost exactly. So that's not too bad for me. I feel like I'm doing less and less of them as time goes on. Maybe I've said mostly what I need to say and I figure why repeat myself. Maybe that's why, but there's always good new, good tales to tell, and like especially with the street stall and things like that. But you know, anyway, But today I have a really big reason why I want to do a podcast, and it's the title of this podcast is the same title as a podcast that I did right after I started podcasting. I started podcasting on. I think it was January 1st, 2009, I believe. And this episode, it was on May 25th, 2009. And I'm not going to post a link to it because I don't really promote my old podcasts anymore very much because a lot of them have links and they have references to people who have really turned around and people who I don't really want to promote. Now, back then, they were abolitionist or they were, but now they're for whatever reason. So I just, whatever, that was the past. I'm very careful. I really don't promote anybody anymore except for just Gary Francione's work, which is how I started, and I'm just sticking with that. But, it was done in May and it was called Vegan, Vegan, Vegan by Hook or by Crook. We are going to end the stigmatization of this word. And the description of the podcast was the word vegan a million times, and I'm doing that again this time because you see what happened. I'd sort of forgotten about that. Like, we've been fighting this battle for the word vegan for the whole time, but the thing, see, what we were really, even back then, the welfarist groups were saying they weren't gonna, they didn't want to promote it because they had stigmatized it so much. They'd allowed it to be stigmatized. They didn't stand up for it, whatever. And now it's, but what's really sad to me is what's happening, well, what I'm noticing now with groups, that there's been a lot of discussion about this group called DXC, Direct Action Everywhere is what it stands for, DXE, I guess is the X must mean action. And they're very adamant. Like, they're just completely committed to not mentioning the word veganism. And it's not just the sort of the creators of the group, the founders of the group, or the website or anything like that. It's every activist. Like, these are young people who support this group, or they protest in the name of this group, and they promote themselves via this group, and they identify with this group, and they are all refusing to use the word vegan, and a lot of them are young. And the reason they're giving, or a lot of the reason that they're giving, like I heard Gary Francione was on Bob Linden's Go Vegan Radio, and they were discussing this, and they've now got a call-in feature where you can call in, and there was somebody who said, you can't, you know, what's the point in saying vegan, because it's just about personal preference, and it's just this sort of lifestyle choice. And I'm thinking, where did you get that from? Like, where, what, no, it's not. You know, you're supposed to be fighting that. You're supposed to be clarifying that and helping us stand up for that. And you're giving up on it. And it dawned on me, and I might be wrong, I don't know this person, but I have a feeling they haven't been vegan for that long. And that's not to sort of denigrate, like, how long they've been vegan. But the terrifying thing is, like, if I'm right, I could be wrong, but if I'm right, what's happening is there are new people who are going into this sort of, we have this really everything's changed now. Everything's really different now. In a lot of ways, a lot better. There's still so many problems, though. And so the problem with this denigration of the word vegan by animal activists, which is always been astonishing to me, by vegans. I mean, these are vegans doing this. These are vegans. This woman claims to be vegan in terms of, like, she identifies, like, she doesn't use animals, right? And she's like, I'm not going to use the word vegan because it's just a personal preference. And then, well, then that would lead me to ask her, oh, so you're not actually vegan then? Like, what, you just do it when you feel like it, or you just eat a vegan diet but you buy leather or wool? Or, I mean, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Is that what it is to you? Because then how am I to believe you're even vegan? And so it's really confused. But I have a feeling that these young people have come into this as new vegans, and because they're not abolitionists, because abolitionists have no problem saying vegan, we know exactly what vegan means, we completely stand up for it, defend it, promote it, it's our moral baseline. These are not abolitionists, obviously. These are these new activists, and they are being into this new world of where veganism is being more mentioned now by the welfarist movement, the animal, the mainstream animal movement, the dominant movement in terms of numbers and everything. And it is, that's how they portray it there. So you get these new people coming in, and they've already given up on it. They don't have any idea about the history of it. I don't even know if they've ever heard of Donald Watson or the origins of the meaning of the word, about how it's not about personal choice at all. It's all about the non-human animals. That's the entire basis for it. And there are benefits to oneself, of course, but they're getting this false thing of veganism from the, and that's what's happened. And it's happening, and these new advocates are flat out refusing and outspokenly refusing to use it. And they're not the individuals themselves, they're probably not very, they probably don't bother reading the website of the group that they're advocating for. They just join, you know, they probably just, I don't know. They probably have no idea that their group totally defends and supports welfarist advocacy. And they're just like, we're not welfarists. I don't support welfarist reform. And it's like, well, the organization that you promote and that you point people to and whose website you send people to does. So maybe you should, you know, maybe you should sort of reflect on that. But yeah, anyway, the point is that I see this thing happening, and that's my question. Like, I wonder if these people are new vegans. Have they been vegan recently in the last 3 or 4 years? And they've come into this climate where it's more spoken now, including by the welfarist movement, but it's spoken by the welfarist movement as this arbitrary, it's sidelined, but it's there. It's just mixed up with vegetarianism, or it's an option, or it's just one thing that you can do. And there's this huge fad diet movement about veganism, which is all about personal choice. And then you have all of these people who want to eat a vegan diet and call themselves vegan, or who want to eat a mostly plant diet, like eat a lot, mostly eat plants, but they'll eat some animal products and they want to call themselves vegan. And so the word is being perverted, and that's been happening for a while. And, you know, but the problem is that these new vegans come along and they buy into that, and they therefore sell it out completely, which again makes no sense, because what do you call yourself? I mean, are they going to invent a new word or something? I mean, is that what's going to happen? I have no idea. But it doesn't make any sense to me. But I feel like that's what's happening. So I feel like these new vegans, they're not abolitionists. They're not coming into the abolitionist movement. They see all this stuff about veganism. They don't really pay attention to us in terms of how we portray veganism sort of by its roots, which is, you know, about the non-human animals. And it's not arbitrary, and it's a moral obligation, and they don't say that, they don't get that. So when they come along and they see us saying promote veganism, they've already made up their minds, because they've already seen how everybody else, every other animal activist, all the people who are in the mainstream animal movement, have perverted the notion of veganism. You don't need to mention it, you know. It's so that's the only thing I can think of. Where else is that coming from? You know, where are they getting it from, these young people who are now refusing to use the word vegan on grounds of sort of, because they're actually saying that it actually means this, and they don't want to represent that. I mean, they're vegan themselves, so maybe they have to invent a new word for themselves because they're not satisfied with the word vegan anymore, even though they are vegan, allegedly. But yeah, it's very, very sad. It's really, really, really sad. And I'm really just, yeah, sad about it. So, I mean, I'm not going to give up on the word vegan. I'm certainly not going to give up on it. If somebody has to invent a new word, you know, maybe that'll happen, as long as it means the same thing. The meaning is what matters. It really, that is what matters. But it's nice to have a word to represent that meaning. It's nice to have a succinct concept that you can articulate quickly. So what these people do instead, these people who refuse to say the word vegan, even though they are vegan. I don't even know if they call themselves vegan. What do they say? We're non-user animals, non-speciesist, anti-speciesist, because they refuse to use the word vegan. Maybe that's what they call themselves. I think it's, if you can use less words to get your meaning across, I think it's better. One of the things I always fight is my verbosity, which is, means I talk too much. For example, I've just spent 10 minutes making a point that I could have made in 3 minutes if my thoughts were organized and if I didn't keep repeating myself. So a person like me who really needs to work on that greatly appreciates having this concept that I can point to. Veganism. It means anti-speciesism. It means I don't use animals. It means about justice of non-human animals and not using them as renewable resources. Abolitionist vegan, which is how I identify, goes beyond veganism in that it is about the six principles of the abolitionist approach to animal rights, which are very sound. I've done YouTube videos explaining each of them as I understand them and also just referring people back to them. They're basically just rephrasing what I didn't want to try to reinterpret them. I mean, the meanings are there. I just made videos about them. But yeah, so that's what talks about how we also reject, you know, any racism or sexism or ableism or ageism or heterosexism, any kind of discrimination. It's all linked, and this goes beyond that and how it's about nonviolence, fundamentally nonviolence. We don't agree with promoting the use of violence, you know, obviously to end animal use. So that's what I'm seeing a lot of, and it's this, and there's a lot of, I mean, what's really sort of annoying to me, because it's frustrating, is these other movements get a huge amount of participants almost instantly, because it's kind of, I think, exciting. Like, they get to sort of break the rules because they run around, they get to sort of yell and stand in a group and yell, and people seem to like doing that a lot. It seems to me, and I could be wrong and I hope I'm wrong in the long run, a lot more people, especially maybe younger people, seem to prefer sort of what Gary Francione calls street theater, which is, you know, you sort of paint yourself in blood and lie down on a pretend, tray, like a styrofoam tray, and pretend to be a chicken breast, you know, or something, or stand with a bullhorn and chant, to just like doing a table where you actually talk to people one-on-one, face-to-face, and you have these difficult conversations with them, and you actually have to think responses to questions and be challenged, and you have to be ready to think on your feet, or because you actually are having a dialogue with the person, and you actually have to listen to them. You don't just speak at them. You actually speak with them, and you have to have this. And I don't know, do they think it's boring? Do they think it's, or what? But there's some kind of blockage. But if they can get to sort of dress up and yell in a big group, they're much more keen to do that. And that's why that frustrates me, is because, of course, I'm really, really desperately wanting to see more abolitionist education happening. The thing about education is you actually have to speak with people. Now, I don't really know much about a lot of these protests. They talk to people outside, or people stop and ask them questions, and then they talk. Maybe that's happening on the sidelines. I haven't seen a lot of evidence of that. And they certainly don't say that when they've gone on when they've spoken on Gary Francione, when they rang into Bob Linden's show, or when they come on Gary Francione's Facebook page and talk about their actions. It seems very clear that they that's what they do, is they sort of yell at people or speak at people or chant, and there's very little opportunity, it seems, for the people to discuss with them what the heck is going on. And if they're not explaining, if they're not giving people the solution, which is to go vegan, because, and they haven't invented any new words yet, so they're just saying all these concepts that are very, unfortunately, they're completely perverted by the welfarist movement. I mean, the really sad thing is words do get perverted. Like, I never use the word cruelty at my street stall or abuse, unless I'm really clear that I mean, you know, the actual meaning of it, and that use is abuse, because they've been perverted. Those are welfarist terms. Liberation is a welfarist term. You know, every movement sort of has its rhetoric, and I use that word a lot, but like abolitionist movement there are concepts that are really important. Abolition is a concept, it's a word, it means something, and it's the, you know, the foundation of our what we're doing. We talk about abolishing animal use, we don't want to regulate it. Also, veganism is the fundamental moral baseline, because when you become vegan, you abolish animal use in your own life, as much as is humanly possible in your personal circumstances. For example, I've used the example that I can't levitate. So I walk on the concrete streets of my city, which have animal products in them. But that doesn't mean that therefore I can just go and have myself an ice cream cone, because what's the difference? Besides, I would never do that again. And if I could levitate, I would, right? We're in this hodgepodge, but one of the good things I've noticed is that it's sort of inevitable. I always knew this was going to happen, and it's going to keep happening. The really powerful ideas and truths of abolition, of the abolitionist approach to animal rights, are permeating everywhere. So you see the rhetoric being used, sentience is now used so much more. Trust me. I mean, unless I'm blind or unless I didn't read the right things, but I pretty much think I've been paying the same kind of attention to mainstream stuff as I was right when I first went vegan, and also to the mainstream, to animal movement. And they're using those concepts. Now, the sad thing is they start to pervert them, you see. They start to twist them and distort them to their own meaning. So once the welfare start talking about sentience, and then they keep promoting, you know, they keep promoting welfarist reform, which is basically these beings are sentient, but they're still economic commodities, and we just have to exploit them in a more humane way. Whatever, it does pervert it. But so it is. It's you're always kind of in this never ending struggle to protect the truth and the words and the concepts that you stand for, so they don't get perverted and they don't get twisted up. And that's a never-ending struggle, and but you mustn't give up. And now I see a lot of people talking about the word vegetarian and how it used to mean a vegan, and I would say, well, it's just diet, so I don't care about the word vegetarian. And people say, no, it really actually meant vegan. It meant that you didn't use animal products at all. It was literally vegan. This is what people say, and apparently the etymology of the word, and maybe they're right, and maybe they are right that it was actually no wool, no leather, no animal use, you didn't use animals for entertainment, etc., etc. I haven't verified that, and if that is true, then look what happened to the word vegetarian. Well, Donald Watson had to invent a new word, and he started out with the word vegan, it meant diet. He later, you know, clarified. I don't believe that he sort of changed his mind and thought, really, we should do this too. I think he always meant it. But in terms of, again, being really clear about concepts and making sure, especially if you're spreading those concepts, that you don't overlook anything, I think he went and re-clarified, you know, the meaning to include all animal use. But in the beginning, he was focused on diet, because vegetarianism, when he identified as vegetarian, which meant he ate only vegetables, but then he realized that it was also, he was in the same category as people who ate eggs and drank milk, and he realized that he needed to invent a new word. So by the time he came along, the word vegetarianism had long been meant a diet only, and it meant a diet including animal products. So I don't want to see the word vegan go the same way, but I mean, if there's a new word invented that means the same thing, and if the word vegan, becomes completely overrun to the way, you know, to that point, then okay, we'll deal with it when we come to it. But we're not there yet. Like, we've just begun. So the abolitionist movement is the movement that put veganism on the animal rights map in the way that it is. I mean, even back when Gary Francione wrote Rain Without Thunder, they were still saying vegetarianism. You'll see that word in his book. When he came along with his website that says the abolitionist approach and abolition means veganism, and now that's the fundamental moral baseline. So we shouldn't be giving up on that word at all. We're just getting going. The welfare is, forget about, I mean, we can't forget about what they're doing, but what I'm saying is they're not as powerful as we like to think them to be. We just need these people to think clearly and, you know, maybe to pay more attention and to read, you know, to read a bit more, those who can, those who are illiterate enough to be able to read books and things like that. And then they can talk to their people in their community who maybe aren't literate, like unable, or who for whatever reason aren't literate. Like, there are people in the world who are adults and for whatever reason are mostly to do with oppression and poverty. I'd say vastly majority, in fact probably all, maybe I'm wrong, but is they're not literate at that age. So those people you talk to. So like when I meet people at the stall, I'm talking to them. I'm literate. I was privileged. I have an education of reading and writing. I can read the books. I want to help other people become literate, so I'm actually looking to do that. I like to do that as for a living, but it's not any money in it, but I'm going to be a volunteer tutor for adult literacy, hopefully, if I pass the course. And because I think words are power, knowledge is power, reading is power, education is power, which is why they don't want the poor of the world or the vast majority of the world to be educated. I mean, George Carlin did a beautiful skit on that. People in power do not want an educated public. They do not want people who can think critically. And neither does the welfareist movement. Okay. So anyway, it's very sad. I can see this happening. And I thought to myself, didn't I do a podcast, you know, about the word vegan? But it was sort of different then. I guess I'd probably have to go back to listen to it, but back then it wasn't that people were refusing to use it, because the reason why people aren't using it now, these new young advocates, I'm only going by what I've heard from these DXE supporters, group members or whatever, who were public about their refusal to use the word. And the reason they gave is that veganism means a personal arbitrary choice, and that's actually not what it means. They're actually wrong about that. That is not what veganism means. So they're incorrect. They have incorrect information, and they're just making it worse, because if that's not what veganism means, and if we need to defend this concept so that we can have something that we can easily, the solution is encapsulated in this beautiful word and this beautiful concept rather than all these airy-fairy welfare-sounding things, then they themselves are vegan, and they haven't come up with any better word yet. Then I guess they call themselves, maybe people call themselves anti-speciesist. Is that what's happening? Well, you better explain what that means to people, and what it actually means is what veganism means. Okay, it means you don't use animals, you do not wear them, you do not eat them, you do not exploit them. You live in a way out of a moral obligation. You do not use animals or animal products, etc. So in other words, veganism. But, you know, this is very sad. So the reason that they didn't used to use it back when 2009, when I did that podcast, it was all the welfare saying, well, it's too extreme. See, veganism meant what it meant. They knew what it, like, none of them were saying, well, we're not going to use it because it's just this arbitrary fad diet that's just all about self-interest, because that's not what it means. I mean, 5 years ago, it didn't mean that. It still doesn't mean that now. And I really hope these new advocates wake up and join with those of us who are sending this concept out into the world rather than giving up on it and trying to, you know, giving up on it already when there's really no need to. Okay, you shouldn't even be part of that movement anyway. You know, if you're against humane exploitation promotion, then you need to get away from groups that support it and stop pointing people to websites and organizations that openly support that. I mean, take a look at what you're doing in that respect. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, back then they wouldn't do it because they said it's too extreme, it's too radical, we're going to scare people away. This is what we were fighting against. When I came to New Zealand, and I was like telling everybody, please, can we... You know, why aren't we promoting veganism? Oh, no, we can't do that. It's too extreme. And now it's gone the other way where the welfarists have watered it down. So it's not so what they quote extreme anymore, because it means to them they are presenting it as this arbitrary fad. It's part of you could just sort of do it, or you can like cut down, or you can be a welfarist, or you can be veg, which is the same. And they are watering it down. And then the really sad thing is that these new advocates are coming along and they're seeing welfarism, because that's pretty much dominant. By the time they see abolition, or by the time they discover it, or actually go anywhere near it, they've already got this idea in their mind that, you know, we can't promote veganism because it doesn't mean anything. And I have to tell you, I was just thinking about that. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I was really one of those people in my country who were putting heaps of pressure, and I'm not saying that they did it to humor me, but I was putting heaps of pressure on the career welfarists groups, which the main one, there's more sort of groups in New Zealand now, I think, but there was a SAFE, obviously. SAFE is it's like the Animals Australia of New Zealand, the PETA of New Zealand, or the whatever, HSUS, I don't know. It's just the New Zealand Welfarist Org. It's been around for ages, and they have career people working, you know, it's the business of animal welfare in New Zealand. And I was saying, you know, we were like, we use the word vegan, have a vegan campaign, da 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 da. I really regret that now. I wish I had stayed the heck away from them, and I had never asked, you know, because I'm not saying that they just turn around and said, oh, Elizabeth Collins, let's get her off our backs, so let's start using the word vegan. But there has been this movement. And then, so they're volunteers, because of abolition, having a voice on the internet, which is global. Therefore, there are people in New Zealand reading about abolition from sources overseas and saying, hang on a minute, these are new volunteers, they're new vegans. And they're like, well, wait a minute. And they're going to their organization and saying, why aren't you using the word vegan? So to appease them, not to appease me, they couldn't care less about me, but to appease their volunteers whom they need, the lifeblood of their organization. Without their volunteers, where would they be, right? They are throwing it in there, and then they've perverted it and they've mixed it up. And I really wish they never mentioned the word vegan. I actually did a post about it. I've been thinking this for a while. I'm like, damn, that was a huge mistake making that happen. We should never have allowed them, or at least we, you know, not that we could stop them, but maybe it would have happened anyway. I think it would have happened anyway, because their volunteers would have gone to them and questioned anyway. But I wish I hadn't had some part in getting them to say it, because they are perverting it. Look at these new activists coming in. I'm sure these are new vegans. Don't tell me these people who went on Bob Lennon and stuff. Don't tell me they've been vegan for 10 years and they've suddenly decided they are new. And they're going into the welfarist and they're seeing what they've done to the word vegan, and they are buying into that instead of standing up against it. And that's what's happening. So you have Go Veg, and then you have the veg/vegan, veggie/vegetarian/vegan, and all this stuff. And, you know, you have all these like fads, and then you have all these people, celebrities. So you have like Beyonce, who might eat maybe is eating a vegan diet. I don't even know if it really is vegan. And then all the vegans and the animal welfarist people are saying, Beyonce is vegan. And then people who think reasonably clearly are saying, no, she's not. She's not vegan. You're calling her vegan. You're perverting the notion of vegan. Oh, well, I don't want anything to do with that word. It just means Beyonce eating this fad diet for a few months. So we actually need to stand up against that, in my opinion. But I do regret that. And I look, and you know, we have this group in New Zealand called Go Vegan. I think it's called Go Vegan New Zealand, and they promote everything but veganism. I mean, it's being mixed up with non-veganism, which it always was before. Like SAFE would just have the odd vegan recipe. SAFE actually really doesn't actually really say the word vegan a lot. It's not really them that I they do the Go Veg, and so they're doing the whole vegan / vegetarian thing, and that's what they've done to it. Like, but they don't actually really talk about veganism unless they're talking about veg and diet and, you know, stuff. But then you have these new groups who are young people again, who are saying, well, we're going to call ourselves vegan, you know, vegan New Zealand or whatever, and then you look on their Facebook page or the website, and there's a lot of information about veganism, but there's tons of information about animal welfare, which is non-veganism. So they're mixing it all up together. And again, that waters it down. That's why we talk about it has to be the fundamental moral baseline. That's why we say it's got to be, that's the thing you talk about. You don't mix it up with non-veganism. You don't mix it up with anti-foie gras campaigns or any other arbitrary, you know, that waters it down, and that doesn't, yeah, it doesn't help keep it what we need it to be, which is very, very clear. So I'm glad we have abolitionist vegan, and I think, you know, I'm never, like, I'm, don't know how, you know, long I'm going to live, but if I live until for another 20, 30, 40 years, I would like to think that on my, you know, deathbed, I will be calling myself an abolitionist vegan, and people will know what that means, and they won't be like, what's vegan, you know, like, they won't say, oh, she means anti-speciesist animal liberationist, you know, I'm gonna sort of try to keep that word alive as long as I'm alive. I just have to go and take care of the Buddha. I'll be right back. Hi, sorry about that, that's Buddha. I don't know where I was, but I think I've said enough about that. I just, if anybody's listening anymore, I feel like I don't do my podcast ever enough anymore, but, and you know any of these new young people who are becoming vegan, maybe they're not even calling themselves that, I don't know, and they are very confused, try to help them become clear thinkers. And I mean, I'm not saying they're not clear thinkers, sorry. They're being presented with a confused thing, and it's overwhelmingly confusing. And part of me says I can't blame them given the dominant paradigm that they're going into. I wish they knew that there was this abolitionist movement, and they don't understand it because their critiques of it are completely way off. They don't even know what it is they're critiquing. What happens is that people hear other people talking about abolition and the abolitionist movement and the theory of abolition and Gary Francione, and they distort it and they misrepresent it and they lie about it and they... I mean, I saw a comment today about how we actually want to keep the animals in the cages and we want to keep the gestation crates and the battery cages going. That's actually our agenda, is to keep those things going. And I think that the person who said that is one of those people who's deliberately, you know, they're not very scrupulous people. Either that or it's somebody who heard that from somebody else and actually believed it. But can you see the problem? So I try to encourage people, like all I do on my Facebook page now is try to get people to go and read Gary Francione's work. I mean, I've been trying, that's always been what I've been doing from the first day that I did this podcast. If you read his books and watch those videos on his website, listen to the interviews, before you go on the Facebook page and try to argue, if you read them and understand it, it's really simple and beautiful, and it's very exposing of what we're talking about when we're talking about speciesism and animal welfareist advocacy. New welfareism is speciesist. So, but if you don't, or talk to, come with this sort of preconceived notions, because they're mostly wrong and distortions. If you really want to do street theater activism, or if you really want to make some noise or dress up in costumes and things like that, or I shouldn't say costumes, like I guess you paint yourself in red paint and you lie on the ground and pretend to be, it's symbolic, I guess you'd call it symbolic art, or it's, you know, whatever. Just if that's the only way you feel comfortable speaking out, you're just not, you just, that's how you have to express yourself. Just make sure you're not doing it in the name of any group that's promoting welfare and complete, and then turn around and say, well, I'm an abolitionist, I don't agree now with animal welfare. And then you're sending people to these people who do read, people who are going to go and sit and read things online and are going to go to the website that you're pointing them to and the group that you're pointing to and read these essays written by these PR people or these career people who make money off this. They've got nothing but time to devote to this because it's their career. And they're going to read that website about animal welfare and, you know, baby steps and all this kind of stuff. No mention of Gary Francione. They'll talk about the great myth. Like, I remember Melanie Joy wrote this article about the great myth and the great divide, but she never mentioned Gary Francione's name. She didn't want people to go to his website. You know, so if that's how you are, and if you've got some pervert, like, I think you should be, I think people should be reading Gary Francione's work. That's bottom line. I mean, I wish they would, I should say. But if you're going to do your that kind of activism, your grassroots thing, and that's how you feel comfortable, just watch, you know, watch what you're pointing, where you're sending people. Because people do go home and look this stuff up. People who are going vegan, people who are interested in going vegan, who want to go vegan, go and research and read these things. Because I did it. When I first decided to go vegan, I spent hours reading because I needed to know what the hell that meant on a day-to-day basis. Because when I looked at my life and I looked at everything I did, at everything I ate, at everything I wore, at everything, it was all non-vegan. And in order to function and learn just simple things like what shampoo to buy, I read and I researched because I wanted to go vegan. I'd made the decision to go vegan. I also read animal rights theory. So if you're going to do your thing, just be consistent and make sure it's abolitionist resources that you're sending them to. And if you, you know, I mean, be consistent, it's no use sending a confusing message. But if the advocates themselves are confused and mixed up and they are completely clueless as to the history of the word vegan or what we're trying to do, then they're going to send a confusing message to the general public and to everybody in their life. So it's kind of, this is really, nothing much has changed from 5 years ago, but like the reason people aren't, there's these two groups of people. We've got these new young activists who are refusing to promote the word, to say the word vegan at all. And they're out there. The worst thing about them is they're out there doing the damage and saying out loud as animal activists, veganism means this. Well, you know, thanks a lot, man. I mean, that is so wrong to do that. That's just wrong. Don't do that. That's like going around and saying, well, feminism just means, you know, just doing whatever you feel like and it's got nothing to do with social justice. I mean, if I, as a feminist, I would be so mad if you turned around and denigrated feminism like that and lied about what it was about. Even if you did it out of ignorance, I would be, excuse me, do not do that. So that's why that's my protest against them. And I've said it, you know, in debates and things online. So it's just a sad, it's very sad. It's really, really sad to see. So anyway, I think I've said the word sad like a trillion times, so I'm going to change the subject now. I just had to get that off my chest. It has been bothering me. I guess there's some really good things happening. I'm very, very busy. It's winter. I'm not doing my stall as much because the last stall that we did was a beautiful day, and it was lovely, lovely day, and we had a great day. It was quiet because it was a long weekend, but we had good conversations, and I pretty much think that every single person we spoke to that day was young, and to me, young is like below 30. I mean, I think 30's young, but I mean, when I say young people, I mean like young people, like 20s, teenagers, maybe early 30s. So that's nice. Usually we talk to people from all different, I mean, the beautiful thing about doing community activism is you can see the people you're talking to. When you're online, you really only have an avatar. So you could be talking to a troll for all you know. You could be talking to five people who are the same troll. You could be talking to somebody who's pretending to be a kid who's actually in their 60s, or somebody who's a man who's pretending to be a woman. I mean, you don't know. In the street, you're talking to people face to face. So you kind of get an idea of how many people you talk to. And that's why I'm telling you it works, because I speak to older people, I speak to younger people, I speak to women, I speak to men, I've spoken to lesbian, gay, transsexual people. Don't know if I've spoken to bisexual people, but I would imagine I have. And it's the same message and it's the same reaction, okay? Demographics in this respect, they don't matter. Individual thought, changing individual paradigm, it works, because these are fundamental moral truths that people hold. Fundamental moral truths that they hold. Okay. Most people actually do care about animals. That's why Gary Francione talks about moral schizophrenia. Okay. And so abolitionist advocacy, which most people who criticize it don't even have a clue what it is, and so all they do is making straw men, is actually this amazing advocacy if you put it into practice in your community. It's just so, because it's basically irrefutable, because it's fundamental things that we hold in our hearts. It's really, really is the same way we do about fundamental human rights, like children and advocating for women and people of color, people, oppressed people, disadvantaged people. You know, it's the same. It's social justice. It is social justice. Yeah, that was another thing that these people were saying, was like, you know, we're a social justice movement. We don't want this arbitrary thing. And it's like, veganism is a social justice movement. But anyway, we've got abolitionist veganism. So that's what we are. We're abolitionist vegans. That is our concept. So if they're going to turn around, if everybody's going to turn around and throw veganism under the bus, they can't touch abolitionist veganism. Oh, they're trying to, though. They're trying. I mean, I'm an abolitionist, but... Well, I'm an abolitionist... Yeah, I'm an abolitionist, but da 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 da. So anyway, it's a struggle. It's a real struggle. And the annoying thing is that you're spending all this time, you know, people criticize us abolitionists for criticizing welfare and for criticizing. We get criticized all the time. That's what a debate is, honestly. It's oftentimes supposed to be constructive criticism, but it's definitely criticism. So these people come on and argue and argue and argue and argue and say, you're wrong and you're this and you're that. And mostly they're using straw man arguments and they don't even know what we're doing. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true, because I've been talking to the people on that welfare side for this 5 years, and it's been that way, right, basically right from the beginning, and it seems to be that way all the time. And they come on and say, you shouldn't be doing this, you people are wrong, you people are doing these negative things. And then they turn around and say, you know why you're wrong? Because you're criticizing other vegans. And it's like, well, what are you doing? You just came on here and criticized other vegans. The difference is that we don't sit around and cry about it. We know that that's part of a healthy debate. So they come and criticize and we're like, yeah, let's talk about this. You don't like our approach. You don't like what we're doing. But don't be hypocritical and sort of in self-denial and then like accuse us of doing something that you're actually doing right now. Obviously, you think there's a purpose to speak out against something that you don't agree with, that you think is damaging, because otherwise why would you come on our page and say to us, hey, you're being divisive, you're criticizing too much, you're causing all these problems. What are you doing? What are you doing right now? You're on our page criticizing us. The thing is that we'll, you know, if you try to have a rational conversation about it, then it will at least try to do that. But a lot of times there's a lot of insults that happen and stuff, which is why I'm so sick of the internet. But anyway, it's let's think, you know, think clearly. Criticism is important. That's why it's called critical thinking. So anyway, I just went off on another tangent. But anyway, so yeah, Street Stall, haven't done it, but and I'm doing this adult literacy course, which is really, really intense actually, and of course I work full time. So if I spend all day Friday and Saturday and Sunday, I took today off work to go to the course, and I spend like the entire weekend from 9 to 5, then I don't get a day off. And then I go back to work on Monday, and then I have this massive assignment that takes me actually hours and hours, like a couple of days to finish in terms of like after work doing the homework. So I'm just I just have to get, you know, I have to do this bit, and then I have to do the tutoring, and I'll be like tutoring people, which is also going to be my spare time. So, but summer is, you know, going to be there, and I'll probably do at least another couple of street stalls during the winter. You know, I'll try, but we've got the Waitakere Festival coming up, which is a big, big festival, which I'm not going to miss this year. I missed it last year because I was not organized, and they didn't send me an invite because I just got dropped off by accident, and I am going to email them and say, you invite me to this, I'm coming this year, because it was one of the best festivals we ever had. And then after that's the Greyland Festival, and they've already sent me an invite because they are business people, and they charge so much money, it's ridiculous. The Waitakere Festival doesn't charge us. Nobody else charges us. The Greyland Festival, they must make millions. But I still pay and I still go because, hey, that's all right. That's what you do. That's, I pay, you know, I pay for that because I can. I've got a job and I save up and I pay for it. And other festivals let us go for free, like I said. And then, you know, after that, we've got a couple of other, you know, little things in the summer. And so it's not much to talk about in terms of street stall. I've got some personal stories I could talk about. Like some, even today at the course, I had a very interesting conversation with people because, of course, I'm openly vegan. I use the word. I have a heart badge, what is it called, pin that I wear that says Go Vegan on it. And I like that. I wear it every single day. No matter where I am, and it actually says Go Vegan on it. There's no guessing. There's words on it, which I like, and so people see it. But there was people today were first of all the there's morning tea being brought. Everybody's bringing morning tea, and I usually just don't have anything to do with it. And then when it's my turn, I bring a vegan morning tea. But the woman who brought the morning tea brought a completely vegan morning tea, 100% vegan morning tea. Okay, people, because she knew that I wouldn't eat it if she didn't, and she wanted me to share with it. Now this person is not vegan. I'd like them to. I hope they go vegan. We didn't have a big philosophical discussion because she never approached me about that. Her sister-in-law was vegan and she knows what vegan is. She doesn't seem to express a lot of interest in. She doesn't sit down and talk to me. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it. We're on this course, but she did bring a fully vegan morning tea, and I checked it. She told me every single ingredient. And she made these beautiful, she made hummus with raw carrots and broccoli. And I have to share a tip with you, which you might already know, but I didn't know about this. I love broccoli, but I can't eat raw broccoli. It just does my head in. I don't know. I can't, it's too much. It's like, I feel like I'm eating a tree. I don't know. And she learned because she has a lot of allergies in her family, and they are gluten-free, and they're sugar-free, and they're all these things. So they did a bunch of, so she has this sort of prior knowledge of from a health perspective, and a lot of, as you know, allergy people and health issues, what are they eating? Well, they're eating vegan, with, you know, because it's really, really healthy. I mean, we don't ignore that part. We don't neglect to tell people that part. That's another misconception about abolition. But anyway, I won't go into that now. But she says that the broccoli was, it had a bit of olive oil on it. And I thought she'd steamed it. And she said, no, you just take the raw broccoli and you just sprinkle it with salt and a little bit of oil, and it kind of slightly marinates it. So you're not cooking it, it's still completely raw, but it's not that really, really raw. You know, like broccoli is just so raw. I mean, if you want to try what a raw vegetable is, eat raw broccoli and cauliflower, you're like, oh damn, yeah, this is raw. So I'm totally going to do that now and eat more raw broccoli. And I didn't know about that. So she cut it up and it marinated. And anyway, we were dipping that in the hummus and it was so delicious. And she told me exactly what was in the hummus. And then she made these bliss balls and they were like cashews and raspberries and, you know, nuts and then and coconut. And then, and she told me everything that was in them. And I ate a couple. And then she was talking somebody else and they were talking about recipes. And she said, oh, and I do this one with da 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 and honey. And I said, oh, I thought, oh my gosh. I said, these don't have honey in them, do they? Because she didn't tell me that they did. And she said, no, of course not. She said, look, relax. My sister-in-law is vegan. These are vegan. They do not have honey. I know about that. This was just another recipe that they were talking about. So I got a bit of a fright, but it was really, I was really pleased. And I'm actually galvanized now to do a decent morning tea. I volunteered to do Sunday, on the last Sunday of the course. And I'm going to, she's given me something now I have to live up to, because I wasn't really going to be bothered, to be honest. I was just going to get some vegan store-bought cookies, because I figured I didn't want to make a whole big thing of cupcakes, but maybe I'll make cupcakes, yeah. They're just a hit, those cupcakes. They are just a hit. You just cannot go wrong with those cupcakes. From Vegan Cupcakes Take Over the World, you just, people just go completely and crazy for them. So yeah, that was really nice. And then we had the, and then it went on where this, they were, there was another woman, and she was, then she was talking about, she started her conscience, and she started talking about the animals, and I, she, and she said, so why did you go vegan? And I said, because of the animals. I said that I went vegan for them. I said I did, because she said, well, how, the open of the conversation was, how is your iron levels? Are your iron levels okay? And we talked a little bit about iron, and then I just kept saying, listen, I'm not a nutritionist. Because her iron levels were apparently on the low side. She was not deplete. She is not suffering from iron deficiency. But in the big scale of where your iron should be, like, and there's a massive scale. Have you ever had your blood? It's like the normal range is like 10 to 500. And you're like, well, what the heck? So if I'm 15, it's the same as if I'm 495. I mean, why is it this huge range? But anyway, she's on the low end. So her doctor, of course, said she needs to eat red meat. This is what her doctor told her. And I started saying leafy greens. She's like, tons of leafy greens. And, da, da, da. And I said, look, you know, I don't know enough about nutrition, but it seems to me that go and get another blood test, and if it's dropping, if your iron levels are dropping, then there's a problem. But if they're just consistently in range, even if they're on the low range, I can't really see the problem with that. I mean, why would they give this range if it wasn't this really forgiving thing? And I said, listen, I mean, I said, look, I'm not a doctor, but anyway. But then we started talking about, because I said to them, you know, I went vegan not knowing about health, and I was going to go vegan anyway, and I expected to be anemic, and I expected to be B12 deficient, and I didn't care. Even though on the Earthlings forum, I was getting, one of the reasons that helped me, even though in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm going to be, was these vegans saying, I'm so healthy, I'm eating this delicious vegan chocolate, fair trade chocolate, it's full of iron, and they were saying, I'm so healthy. So they helped me a lot, but I still didn't quite believe them, because I'm like, well, they've got an agenda. You know, they have this really strong agenda for the non-human, so they're going to say that, which isn't fair to call them duplicitous like that. But I was, this is before I was vegan, this was right when I was, you know, the very beginning, before when I was deciding to go vegan. So you have all these doubts, and I still remember those doubts, and you have suspicions, and you have uncertainties, and you have all this indoctrination. I have not forgotten that. But the fact that I know all that doesn't mean I'm going to compromise the moral message because of it, which is what people keep mixing everything up in. So, and, but she led into it, and she was talking about, but I love animals, and she was very bothered. She was bothered, and then she said, well, there's this really great book. Oh, she said, well, I only eat a little bit. You'll always get that when you're talking to someone about veganism. They'll say, well, they'll start sort of reciting what they eat and how much of it they eat. Well, I only eat chicken, and I only eat a little bit, maybe once a week. And you're thinking, I don't really want to know this. This is really not. But you have to. I don't say to them, shut up, or I don't actually say to them, I don't really want to know this. Because I mean, the reason I don't want to hear it, I don't want to hear about. Because to me, when you say I just eat a little bit of chicken, I'm thinking of those chickens. I'm thinking of what they're going through, and they're all individuals. And so, yeah, a thousand of them dying is more death than one of them dying. But I don't, that's not how I think about it. I'm like, I don't want to hear about this horrible, you know, destruction of life that you're engaged. I mean, it just upsets me. But I know that that's part of this. They're going to say that to you, and you have to get through it. And then you have to just turn the conversation to sort of let them know that that's really not. That you could say to them, well, that means that you already, one of the good things you can say is, well, obviously then, you have a huge repertoire of vegan food that you're making on those days when you are eating vegan. So you're really, it's going to be even easier for you because you have all of this other, you've always been doing it a lot. So you use it and you turn the conversation around back to veganism in a positive way. You don't pat them on the back and say, that's good that you're only eating one chicken a week, because go tell that to the chicken. Oh, you're okay. No, it's good. You know, you don't need to do that. You have to use these strategies so that you, when you have the moral baseline sort of ingrained in you, the way you do when you really incorporate, when you sort of abolition becomes part of you, you just find ways never to compromise it. Still being diplomatic, still being tactful, still have keeping the lines of communication open, I should say. I don't want to misuse the word diplomatic or tact because we're talking about very fundamental justice here, but keeping the lines of communication open. You can do that without compromising the moral baseline. You can say things that in print will look harsh and people will react to them. You can say them face to face and people react differently. Trust me, I've done it. So, long story short, she said, "Well, this is real." I said, "I told her about Eat Like You Care, and I'm actually going to give her one of my Eat Like You Care business cards. I might even give her the book. In fact, I have a spare copy. I'm going to give it to her because she said to me, oh, but I eat, she says, you know, I won't even, like if I go out and there's no, I won't even buy chicken in restaurants because it's not fair trade, it's not free range. And I said, hey, listen, that whole free range thing is a myth. And she said, oh, I know, I know. And I'm thinking, well, no, you don't really, or you wouldn't buy it. So it's kind of like, there you go, the whole, she's like, I only buy free range. And I said, that means nothing, you know. And then somebody else said to me, she said, and then she said, well, I think that after she had talked about how do you get your iron, and we started, and I brought it back to the animals, because that's what I always try to do, bring it back to the non-humans. And then we started talking. She said, oh, well, I think that if you can't kill it and eat it, can't kill it yourself, then you shouldn't be eating it. Like that just, she says, there's this distance. We have this distance between, because we just go to the supermarket and it's all packaged up in it, and we're not actually. And then somebody else said, yes, well, if you're not actually doing it, then you're not responsible for it. And I said, well, no, if you're paying somebody to do it, you're directly responsible for it. And then she clarified, oh, that's not what I meant. What I meant is I agree with her that you don't feel like you're responsible for it because you're not doing it as such. You don't think you're doing it. You've got this distance, even though. So we talked a little about that, and this is where the conversation went. And it started out from her asking me about my iron levels. Do you understand, everybody, now, like how you can do that? I'm not blowing my own horn. I'm just showing you that people ask these questions because they actually care. It's not, I mean, maybe she just wanted to know. If she just wanted to know about iron levels and she didn't give a hoot about the non-humans and it was just about diet, this conversation wouldn't have happened. She's the reason why the conversation stayed there. I tried to take the conversation there, but it's up to the other person. Are they going to stay there or are they going to walk away? And if they stay there, they care. And that's who you should, you know, and you do not compromise. So the ironic thing is that, so anyway, then they talked about a book and said, have you read this book? It's called Meat. It was all about meat something. And I kind of said, no. And I said, I don't think I'd want to read it because it sounded like eating meat every day for us, or my yearly meat experience or something. And she said, no, it's about animal rights, which, as we know, is that could mean anything from you know, animal welfare to animal exploitation, which is the same thing. But then she said, no, it's and she said, it's all about the cages and the cages and factory farming. She said, no, it's definitely. And I said, well, you know, it's not about, I said, it doesn't matter, you know, it's all the same, you know, free range, whatever, it's the same. And I said, you should read Eat Like You Care. And we started, and I was thinking, I'm going to give her, and I thought, should I give her a copy? And you know what? I actually have a copy sitting there. I bought a few extra copies because we were going to do this event at the school. That was something I was going to talk about too. Maybe my next podcast, I'll talk about this event that we were going to do at the school, but it didn't happen because we didn't, yeah, it was, I almost wonder if we kind of got cheated out of it. But anyway, so I'm going to give her a copy. So there you go, everybody. I'm going to give her a copy of Eat Like You Care. So the ironic thing is we did this exercise where we had to, because we're trying to learn how to be tutors of how to teach adults who have been deprived of the opportunity to read and write and become literate. And we are going to tutor them. And we're doing exercises. And I need to be really, really careful when I get involved in this because I don't want to have to read stuff about hunting or fishing or butchers or something like that, you know? So like the reading material if there's a person who needs to pass their apprentice butcher, you know, to become a butcher, and they need to, don't pair me up with, like, they'll have to be really clear, do not pair me up with this person, because I will not be able to find appropriate reading material for them, because it goes against my ethics. So, but anyway, so we did a modeling. So the modeling was, the tutor was showing us how to be a good tutor. We're at the stage now where we're actually learning tutoring techniques. We've gotten a lot of the theory behind us, and we're trying to actually say, how are you going to engage with these people, and how are you going to, you know, make it work so that they stay in the class? What techniques are you going to use? And there's all these different techniques. And she modeled a couple, and we had to pretend to be students. And she did supermarket with me, and I was thinking, oh gosh, this is a disaster, because I don't want to talk about, I was thinking, supermarket, that's a bad choice for me. But luckily there was nothing about mention of any specific products. And then when I was asked and sort of role playing, like, oh, so which part of the supermarket would you like to work in? I was like, the produce department, of course. And everybody laughed, because everybody knows I'm vegan. And she said, oh yes, of course. And but then the woman who was expressing a real concern about, because she said to me, anyone would go vegan after reading this book, the meat book that she mentioned. And I just looked her in the eye and I said, well, you didn't go vegan after reading that book. So I was kind of trying to let her know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not an effective book. That doesn't necessarily mean that other people haven't gone vegan after reading the book, but it's just a curious thing to say from someone, you know. And she said, oh, well, I will. And I thought, you are so going to go vegan. I was like, yes. And then that's when the conversation ended, and we had to go back because our break was over. This was just during our break. And then this woman was one of the students who was modeling, and the tutor picked eeling and whitebaiting. Eeling as in hunting and killing and eating eels, you know. And whitebait is a tiny little fish that live in New Zealand, and I mean, I don't know if they live anywhere else, and it's fishing. And I was thinking, wow, why is this happening? Because I just thought, this is really, and I just thought, how, I just was, I hated it, because I didn't want to hear about, so what time do you go out, and how do you dry the flesh, and so what time do you have to go out, and when's the whitebait season, and all this stuff. And the tutor was, you know, just saying all this stuff because, just like I used to be, that was just normal to her. She wasn't thinking about the animals or animal rights or, you know, anything like that. She's just talking about this very common, you know, food hunting thing. She was talking about duck season. Well, you know, there's a season like duck season and stuff, because she doesn't think about it that way. And I have to remember, sometimes I take those things personally. Like, I'm like, is she doing this deliberately to upset me? And don't do that. Like, try not to do that. That's very presumptuous, for one thing, and it's just not useful. But I do sometimes feel that way when things like that happen. I sit there and I think, she knows that I'm vegan, and she knows that I'm in the room. Why is she doing this? And then I think, stop it, Elizabeth, she has completely forgotten. It's just, you know, because not everybody, you know how it is, she's forgotten, and it's really not, it was never on her thing. Or if it was deliberate, or if it was completely disregarding, like, well, I don't care if she's vegan, I'm going to do this anyway, then there's nothing I can do about it anyway. But I don't like to hear it. So I'm sitting there making notes about the technique and trying to ignore the subject matter. But it was this very same woman. And she, during that, she was very uncomfortable. It was really interesting to see. I felt bad for her. She didn't want that subject matter either. And the role playing was that she was apparently had the weekend before, this is all pretend, that in their lesson they had talked about eeling, and she had mentioned that she was into eeling and she used to go eeling, and now we're going to talk about whitebait, and when do you go out and catch the whitebait. And she was trying to go along with it because she was in class, but I could see she was really uncomfortable. And the funny thing is, near the end, she couldn't take it anymore, and the tutor was just trying to demonstrate this learning model. It really wasn't even about the subject matter. It was just demonstrating this teaching technique. And she said, what time do you go out and hunt these, you know, fish or whatever? And the woman said, well, I'm vegan, so I don't do that. I'm not kidding. And my heart leapt. It did. It leapt. And I thought, Okay. You see, she, you know, and then of course the tutor wasn't expecting it, and she, this was sort of throwing a spanner in the works of the exercise, because the whole exercise was based on the fact that the learner was interested in the subject matter, so in order to keep them engaged, you choose material that matches their interests. But little did she know that we had had this conversation and she was having these thoughts, and it was all coming to, you know. So who knows what's going to happen tonight in this person's mind and heart or whatever, but I'm just going to give her a copy of Eat Like You Care. And when she said, "I'm vegan," to the tutor during this role modeling, so I don't do any of that, which completely negated everything that was said before about how she wants to go eeling and stuff, I just, my heart leapt. Anyway, I already said that. And these are little things that give you hope, but just, you know, take it day by day, and that's it. And I'm gonna give her Eat Like You Care. So make sure you have some copies of Eat Like You Care to give to people. I have not hardly given any away. I'm actually very antisocial. So I never go out, and I don't give them away at my street stall, because I guess I could, but I don't think I can afford to just give away that many. So I have put them in a street side library. You know how you walk down the street? Have you ever seen those little libraries? It's like free books. It's like in a giant letterbox just on the street, and it's just the people on that street share books that way. And I've put Eat Like You Care, I've put it in two of those. I've put one at my work library, which is it's actually a work library for social work. Well, it's full of this is where I used to work. I don't work there anymore. I've gotten moved to the new department permanently, thank goodness. So I'm out of the department where I used to have to do all the typing, which I used to talk about. I'm a whole new person. I've got all this extra energy. That's why I can do this literacy course. And but anyway, I did leave one in the library there, because there's a lot of fiction and stuff, and I've left one there. I gave one to my brother recently. I actually gave one to my brother, because before I wouldn't. I mean, I want to give one to my mother, but I don't know if she'll read it. But I think I'll just give her one anyway. But everybody else has given a lot more away than me. I haven't given that many away. I've told tons of people at the street stall about it. I've gotten 4 or 5 copies for the library. Well, I didn't. I requested them and they bought them, and I have the business cards and I talk about it at my street stall all the time. So hopefully, those people have then gone on and read it. But in physically giving copies away, I haven't done that much. But I am going to give one to, I'll bring, I'll take, oh, and it's tomorrow. I'm going to see her tomorrow, so I better put one in my bag right now, because I bought some extra ones recently. So yeah, so that's a little anecdote, you know, that I just thought I'd share. Anyway, I didn't think I was going to talk about that. You know, it's funny, because now I'm a little bit paranoid, and I don't think I should be, but sometimes I think, well, gosh, you know, I meet people, and then what if, you know, what if through, like, somehow they go online or Facebook or something, and then they find me, and then they listen to my podcast, and then they hear me talking about these sort of moments which are private in a way, and they think, oh, she's talking about me, or, oh, well, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, and look at her, she's just spent a whole 15 minutes talking about this interaction, she's nuts or something. I don't know. I just am a little paranoid about talking about personal things now and the people I work with, because I think, oh, gosh, what if they listen to my podcast and then they feel violated, or they feel funny, or they feel like I'm betrayed, you know. So I wasn't going to tell that story, but I don't think that these people that I met today are going to listen to this podcast, and if they do, please forgive me, but this is my life. And I actually did say to them today, I advocate, like, I spend my time advocating, this is what I do, I talk about it, you know, that's what I said. So I was very open about that. So I hope that, you know, that's why I try not to mention names or things like that, and, you know, because that's private. But I just, you know, sharing things, and sharing the bad things as well. I actually had a bad experience at my job, where I feel like I didn't do it right, you know, and I'm like, ah, oh, I messed that one up. And sometimes it's all in the atmosphere. Oh, I know what I was going to talk about. I'll just, sorry. I know I'm talking for ages, but there was, okay, I'll talk about this other experience that I had recently. So, one of the things I have talked about when I was advocating is that even if you're having a really intense conversation on the street stall, or you do meet someone who's openly hostile or who gets upset, which doesn't happen that often, but I've been doing it for 5 years, so of course it's happened, and you, or they say something to upset you, you know, and I remember I talked about how I was frowning. Well, I don't know if you've listened to, anyway, what I'm trying to say is, if you are on the street and you are frowning and your face is turned down and you're looking angry, then people walking past are going to get an impression of that. And so you always try to not have that negative expression on your face. And you can have a serious expression on your face, but try not to have an angry expression on your face or a frowning expression on your face. Well, I don't want to dictate things like that, but I just feel like if you're talking loudly and you look angry, I don't think people are going to want to come over and speak with you, you know? I have to work on that because I'm very, what's the word, expressive. I cannot, that's why I can't stand seeing myself on video. I wear my heart on my sleeve. My emotions are fully up front on my face. I could never play poker ever. I do not have a deadpan. And so my emotions are there. But so what I want to do, what I want to try to do more is smile more. Now, one of the things that so how could I explain this so this makes sense? All right. So I've been watching a lot of documentaries on pornography and the oppression of women and this, which is what pornography is. And I saw this brief interview with this young woman who was in the industry, and she was being interviewed by, I think, Diane Sawyer. So it was this very non-explicit, and I don't know why they picked her, and I can't remember why Diane Sawyer was on, but her mother, I think, she didn't want her daughter to be in the industry. Her daughter kind of ran away, and turns out her daughter was very successful in terms of she wins all these prizes at the pornography, you know, awards, the yearly awards that they have in LA or whatever. She's this sort of big prize earner, and so she's very, well known in the industry, and she's beautiful, beautiful girl. And turns out she was raped when she was 15. Are we surprised? No. And she ran away from home, and so she smiled the whole time that she was talking, and she had a beautiful smile. And then Diane Sawyer was asking her these, you know, questions like, well, how does it make you feel? You know, don't you feel this or that? And she started to cry. This girl, but she was smiling. I can't describe it. So she was really upset, but she still smiled. I cannot describe it, but it was this incredible effect. And then Diane Sawyer said to her, "Why? But you're smiling, right? She says, "You're crying, and you're obviously really upset, and you obviously really don't like what you're talking about, and it's really upsetting you. But that you've got this smile on your face, and I can't remember exactly the words that she said. The girl said, she said, well, if I have to smile, otherwise I'll just, you know, completely lose, I'll just lose control. And this is my way of, I can't remember exactly what she said, but I thought to myself, I want to smile more in general. Because it did not, what I want to emphasize is it did not take away from the power, it did not trivialize. She wasn't grinning like an inane, you know, grin, like a foolish grin or something like that. It wasn't anything like that. It did not in any way take away from the moment. But she was comforting herself with it, or she was trying not to frown for whatever reason. And the effect was, I can't describe it, but I thought to myself, I really need to smile more in general. And even when I'm talking to people about things that really upset me, you don't want to trivialize it. I don't want them to get the wrong idea, but I can't fake it. So like, I don't want it to be forced. So like this was who this person was. She had this thing. She smiled the whole entire time. Like she just couldn't, like, I think her mouth just was a smiley mouth. She just had a smiley face, but even when she was really upset, but it's what I'm trying to say is like, and I even heard that if you actually smile, the actual act of smiling, the physical muscles and things, they create endorphins and it sends signals to your brain, and endorphins happen. So that's not a bad thing, right? But in just in terms of efficacy, like, I think you can say something really serious. Just don't turn the sides of your mouth down and look angry, is what I'm saying. Maybe you won't feel comfortable smiling as such while you say, "Well, you know, they throw all the male chicks in the grinder." I mean, maybe it's not appropriate to smile as such, but what I'm trying, does it make sense to think like you need to have this open expression, reaching out expression? It's like a way of connecting with them as opposed to turning them away. I don't do that very well. I think I frown a lot. So that was something else that I was going to try. And I thought about it, and it didn't happen when I was at the we were at my job, and I never go into the kitchen, and I never eat in the lunchroom because I'm very lucky that I can go home for lunch. But even if I couldn't, I probably wouldn't go into the kitchen and eat my lunch there. I would probably eat away, like at my desk. And but we were there because this one of my colleagues wanted to talk to me, and the only time that we could talk was at my lunch, was at our lunch. So I agreed to have lunch with her in the kitchen of the work, you know, the lunch area. And she was really interested in buckwheat because she's gluten intolerant, and I'm eating this great buckwheat to breakfast, and I showed and I told her about it, and I made it sound really complicated, and I wish I hadn't, but it's really super easy. Like, you take the raw buckwheat groats. I buy a bunch of them, and they're so cheap. Probably one of the cheapest bulk foods that I buy, $5 a kilo. Maybe that sounds incredibly expensive in the United States, but it's quite a lot of buckwheat, believe me, and that is cheap for New Zealand. You have no idea how expensive things are here. You just have no idea. So that's cheap. $5 a kilo is really cheap. And so I buy a kilo, let's say, and that lasts me weeks because I mix in some coconut and some raisins, and sometimes I throw in a treat like goji berries or cranberries. Those are super expensive, but I just throw a few in, and I just mix it all up, and I have this big glass jar with a lid, and it just sits on my bench, and I don't put it in the fridge or anything. It's just the raw mixture there. And then every night I spoon some of it out into a bowl, and I soak it in almond milk overnight. I used to do all this other stuff like soak it for 24 hours and grind it up, but I just do not have the time. I just cannot be bothered. And I discovered you can just soak it overnight, and you can just crunch it up and just eat it the next day. And it gross, it's great. As long as you crunch it. So one of the things I was telling you is like crunch it, because if you don't chew it, it'll just go right through you. You have to actually chew. So I throw in fresh nuts, and then I throw in fresh fruit, and I throw in chia seeds on the top. And I was telling, and it sounded really complicated. And this other woman came and sat, and she was eating. I can't remember what she was eating. I didn't want to look at it, but she said, "Do you mind if I eat here?" And she sat down, and she was listening. And then I thought to her, and I said, and we were talking on and about this mixture, and I wish I had described how easy it was. Like, you just throw it in the thing, and then every night you just spoon it into a bowl, throw your milk, you know, your almond milk in, and the next day there's your breakfast. Take it out of the fridge and you eat it. You throw the few nuts on, dress it. But I even throw the nuts on before I soak it sometimes, and I just soak the nuts in it. But the way I was talking about it, you know, through this, it sounded complicated because I was talking about the preparation stage rather than, you know, because you just throw it all in together, and then once you've done that, there's your breakfast mixed up. So she was like, "Oh, that sounds," I said, "Oh, we're probably really boring you with this conversation," I said, and she said, "Oh, that just sounds so complicated. I'll just stick with my eggs and toast." And I wish I had said, I used to have this little thing on my Facebook page where it was like, things I wish I had said, like, thing I actually said, thing I wish I had said. And what I said, and I, what I wish I had said was, "But what about the chickens? What about the chickens?" I really wish I'd said that, but I didn't, because I didn't get a chance. I didn't say anything because, oh, here comes Buddha. She's gonna start meowing really loudly. Hold on. Hi, baby. Shouldn't meow that loud. Come here. Oh, good. It's all right. Sorry, everybody. So I didn't say anything. Come here, come here. I didn't say anything. I wish I had said, "What about the chickens?" I think I wasn't really controlling the conversation the way I wanted, but I'm sure I frowned. I am sure I frowned. And, hold on. Okay, so what I was saying, yeah, so I'm sure I frowned, and I didn't get a chance to, I was kind of caught by surprise, and then I can't remember what happened. We kept talking more. Oh, right, because, sorry, I have to adjust the headphones. So the, my work colleague who I was talking to about the breakfast said, you know, because she's on this paleo diet, and it's all about meat, 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 that's what they recommend, and she said that, and I, because that's what she was, yeah, so we were, so I didn't really get a chance to react to that. I just will throw my eggs in a pan. Thank you. That's very easy. It bothered me. I was listening to it in my head thinking, oh, man, that was a missed opportunity. Why didn't I stand up for the chickens? And then they said meat. And I said, oh, meat is so bad for you. And I said it in this really, like, oh, I just am so sick of hearing about, I just, like, it's so bad for you. And then the other woman who talked about the eggs was like, well, what do you mean? And then we got into this kind of argument about it, and I started to explain about the carnivore digestive system versus the herbivore digestive system, and then she was like, well, no, but you're just talking about red meat. And we were having this whole conversation about digestive systems and health, and I didn't like it because I don't like to just talk about that as if that's the, that's not the thing you should be focusing on with someone. I know that it's important to know about health, but it wasn't going well because she was quite hostile because she was upset because I was like, oh, meat is so bad for you, and she eats it. So she was, you know, I'm like saying you're just eating, you're just doing something that's so bad for your health, and so she got defensive. And we talked about the digestive system, and I thought to myself, well, I don't really know what an omnivore digestive system looks like because I never really researched it. And if, you know, you want to argue that we're omnivores, maybe they have really long digestive systems too. And so that debunks that. I don't know, but it's true. The carnivores have really short digestive system. I did say that is a fact. But I said, you know, so that's why we have colon cancer stuff. She said, that's red meat. And I said, no, I think. And she said, well, fish, what about fish? Fish isn't heavy. Fish is very light. And I said, look, I said, it's still flesh. Fish is still flesh. But I already felt like I need to turn this conversation around. But she was kind of hostile. And I wasn't, I didn't handle it. And then she said, and then I said, well, I'm not a nutritionist. I often tell people that because I don't want them to think I'm trying to give them expert advice. I just say, I'm not a I can't remember how the conversation ended because we weren't, I was talking to my other colleague who wanted to talk about specific things, and she didn't really want to get into an argument about that. But it didn't go well, and I was thinking later about all the things I should have said. Like, first of all, if the first thing I said was, what about the chickens, that would have just changed the whole dynamic of the entire situation. It would have been way better. I just said, oh, meat is so bad for you because this other colleague of mine is being told to eat all this meat for her health. And I don't usually even talk about just meat, but we were just talking about, she was specifically talking to me about this gluten-free diet and how she's trying to eat more vegan food. She's totally interested in her own health. It's completely arbitrary. It's got nothing to do with the non-humans. So I was just trying to help her out with this breakfast. That's all. It was, she knows all about the ethics and she hasn't gone vegan. So, there are people, yeah, like that. I'm not saying she'll never go vegan, but she certainly hasn't. But the conversation did not go well. And if I had just said, what about the chickens? Even if it had been hostile and even if this woman had been defensive, it's a way better for myself personally. I'm quite okay with people getting defensive and hostile and feeling upset about the what's happening to the chickens than I am about somebody sitting there saying, well, what are you talking about? You know, there's flesh. Fish is a light meat, so that can't be as bad in your gut as red meat. And I don't want to talk about, you know, I don't want to talk about that. I mean, it's dead. They're all dead. I felt like the impression I gave was that I was just feeling superior because I ate this healthier diet and I was just looking down. And I'm hoping that's not what she thought. But it was not, a good scene, and I still keep going over it in my mind. So things don't always go as you plan, and sometimes you're caught off guard, and that's the way it is. And after I said, fish is still flesh, and then she kind of quietened down because she just thought to herself, ugh, this woman doesn't know what she's talking about. And then I wish I had said, the truth is I'm not a nutritionist, and the truth is I didn't go vegan for, you know, health reasons anyway. I never really researched it. I just went vegan because I didn't want to, you know, exploit animals, and I could have at least ended on that. We didn't even get there at all the whole time. And I have seen her again and said hello, and she said hello back. But anyway, I've got all my posters up all over my cubicle because I've moved. I'm in a new department where I like being, and I'm very happy there, but there's a lot of socializing and a lot of food related stuff. And I have to navigate that. The one thing about the contact center is I never had to worry. I mean, it was different. I could just get out of it, like completely not show up. But this department, we do a lot of community stuff, and I'm exposed to a lot of stuff. Now, my manager knows, and I said I will not go and buy milk for people. I will not do anything. And but it's still I'm put in situations now that I didn't have to navigate through when I was at the contact center. So that's the only dynamic that I'm struggling with. But in terms of the workload and in terms of the type of work, it's not just typing all day. So I'm much healthier, and I'm really much healthier, and my RSI is healing, and I've got a lot more energy. It's not as tiring and stressful. So that's good news. I got what I wanted. I got into the new department, and I'm just have to navigate through these whole food situation things, and make very clear that I'm not going to be put in positions I don't want to be put in. Like, for example, I have to organize, I have to get things ready for these presentations. It's part of my job at the moment. So I have to set up the beverage box, and the beverage box has cups, sugar, tea bags, coffee, and cookies. So I'm buying these vegan cookies from the supermarket and putting them in there because I refuse to put their non-vegan cookies in there. And luckily they're really delicious cookies, but it's heaps of packaging, which goes against what I believe. But it's a compromise, which is something I don't like to do. But the packaging I don't like. But I could just leave it and they would get their own cookies, you see. Like, I could just not put them in the box and everybody would know. Like, I could have talked to the manager and said, I'll prepare everything, but they have to get their own cookies. But then they'd be getting non-vegan cookies. And I'm like, well, why not? This whole time I'm organizing these presentations, which is only going to be for a few months, because as soon as this other person returns from her leave and another person, I'm totally going to hand this back because it's actually really expensive for me to pay for all these cookies. But I said, hey, at least for this whole month or this whole few months, they're going to be eating vegan cookies instead of the animals. So, you know, that's why I'm willing to do it. It's not a situation I like being in. I don't know. I just don't like having to, I don't like it. And they, for all I know, they're still going in and grabbing non-vegan cookies, but I'm not touching those non-vegan cookies. I refuse to have anything to do with them. So anyway, little things like that. But if I'm sure other situations will come up, and I'll try to share how I deal with them, especially work situations, professional situations, because these are the scary things. And I was just watching this incredible speech by Chris Hedges. I'm going to finish up now. Sorry, it's been an hour and a half. But he did this incredible speech, which I'll post, and I watched the whole thing. And one of the last questions, which was a really fantastic question, was, this was all about, as a social movement, we need to overthrow this totalitarian capitalist oligarchy that's running our world. And he's saying we need a nonviolent revolution, and we need it now. And the one of the last questions was, what are your strategies for us to reach our indifferent friends and families who are not paying any attention? And he gave this incredible answer. You just have to watch it. Watch the whole thing. This, you know, if you're one of those really impatient people, just, I really hope you watch the whole thing. But at the very least, scroll to the end and listen to the questions. And then hopefully maybe that'll galvanize you and pique your interest enough so that you do watch the whole thing. But the answer he gave was fantastic, because what this man is saying, so he says, well, you know, look, he said, I got arrested. This is Chris Hedges now. He says, I got arrested, you know, going, blocking the door of Goldman Sachs, and I got hauled off to jail. But he said, first of all, don't worry so much about numbers. Because if you worry too much about, this is one of the things I discovered when I was trying to be make an organization and make a group. You spend all your time trying to recruit, and you're actually just trying to get a group. You're not actually doing anything. He's like, just do it. And he said, and also, you know, there's a woman, let's say she's a single mother, she's got a job, she's struggling to make ends meet. She's got a lot more to lose than me, getting thrown in jail or giving up her, you know, doing the things. He said, I have a lot more freedom. I don't work for any institution. And I have a lot more, I am able to do these things more than, so he was trying to tell this man, you know, not necessarily making excuses for apathy, but just saying, you look at your position and you compare it, and the people who can do more or have more, are more able to do things and have less to lose or have less risk or who are less precarious, who are more stable, they're going to be able to do it better than perhaps somebody in that other situation. So I do know there are people who are in worse situations than me in terms of employment, where they are really having to deal with non-vegan things every day. And my heart goes out to you. And I really hope you can find another job where you don't have to deal with that. And or you can find a way to negotiate with your employer. You know, but I understand. I know what it's like. And so I'll try to share things as they come up that are helpful. So anyway, I think I'm done. Thank you so much for listening. It's a really long episode, but I haven't done one for ages, and I guess I had more to say than I thought. I feel better, and I hope I made some sense as usual. I always hope that, I mean. And thank you so much for listening, and please read Gary Francione's books and watch his interviews and watch the videos, the theory of animal rights. And I'm going to post a link to this Chris Hedges speech because it's incredible. And that's about it from me. So thank you so much, and I'll be back. Bye.